Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, May 23rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MPD. Phone records lead to arrest in Madeline's death, by Mercedes Cordero. A Midland man charged with the murder of 20-year-old Madeline Molina Pantoja was arrested after phone records show he had lied during his interviews with a Midland police detective, according to court documents. Mario Juan Chacon, Jr., 24, was arrested Saturday after officials found Madeline's remains in an area approximately 3 miles east of County Road 190 and County Road 1160. On May 11th, an MPD officer was dispatched at around 11.02 p.m. to Palladium Museum Place Apartments at 1711 West Francis in reference to an attempt to locate/welfare check. The call notes stated that the caller was looking for his sister, identified as Madeline, who he had last heard from the day before at 8 p.m. The brother noted the apartment manager was able to let him inside the apartment where he found her phone and keys. He also stated that Madeline and her boyfriend, identified as Chacon, had issues. The officer met with Madeline's brother, who stated Madeline lived in the apartment with Chacon, but that Chacon would stay at the apartment occasionally. Madeline's brother stated that he had received a call from Chacon around 8:30 p.m. the day before, May 10th, and told him that he had an argument with Madeline, and she was not answering his calls. The brother called Madeline around 8:35 p.m. after getting off the phone with Chacon and spoke to her, according to the arrest affidavit. Madeline's brother sent her a text at 8:37 p.m., and never heard back from her, according to the arrest affidavit. The officer spoke with one of Madeline's best friends, who stated the last time she heard from Madeline was on May 10th at 9:31 p.m., when confirming plans for the next day. She stated that she arrived at Madeline's apartment around 6 p.m. and called her several times, but her calls went unanswered, according to the affidavit. She went up to Madeline's apartment and knocked, but no one answered. She stated she was able to push the apartment's door, and through a small crack she saw the light was on, according to the affidavit. The friend left and stated that she had a gut feeling something was wrong, and called Madeline's other best friend to tell her what was happening. She stated she had not seen Madeline since dropping her off at her apartment at 11 p.m. on May 9th. Both women went back to Madeline's apartment to check a second time at around 8 p.m. and observed the light that was previously on was now off, according to the arrest affidavit. The friend was beginning to get worried and called Madeline's brother. According to the affidavit, Madeline's brother called Chacon at 9:25 p.m. to see if he knew where Madeline was, but he was, quote, very evasive and did not appear concerned that Madeline had not been heard from, unquote. Chacon said he was with his dad all day and his family could verify where he was. Madeline's brother stated Chacon sent him his location around 9:26 p.m., showing he was at his house. The friend also stated she called Chacon at 9:20 p.m., but it appeared he was declining her calls. Chacon called her back at 9:23 p.m. and told her he had witnesses for today and has been at his house all day, and that he was taking his anger medication and was not able to drive, according to the affidavit. Apartment management let Madeline's brother and friends inside the apartment and found her purse, car keys, and dog. They stated that it was out of Madeline's character to leave her dog alone for more than 2 hours at a time. They noticed that a black couch table was missing. Officers were able to enter Madeline's apartment and observed a mop with a dirty bucket of water sitting next to the front door, and that the floor was extremely sticky, as it is when too much cleaning product is used when mopping the floor, according to the arrest affidavit. The officer contacted an on-call detective and informed him of the situation. The officer spoke with a neighbor who stated that she was woken up about 1:30 a.m. by the yelling coming from Madeline's apartment. She stated it was a man and woman she heard yelling. When asked if she heard anyone scream, she stated she heard a woman scream. The neighbor stated she heard yelling from Madeline's apartment very often. On May 12th, officers met with Chacon at around 12:05 a.m., and he told them he had last seen Madeline on May 9th. He also stated he only communicated with Madeline by cell phone and last heard from her around 9 p.m. on May 10th. He said he was at his house around that time and remained there during the night, according to the affidavit. Also on May 12th, officers received a second check welfare call from Madeline's apartments at about 10:50 a.m. The caller stated that a woman's voice was heard inside Madeline's apartment. Officers attempted to contact the person inside, but no one answered. Officers made entry and searched the apartment. Officers observed a mop with dirty water near the front door and a Swiffer-style mop on the floor near the door that leads to the bedroom. Officers also noticed holes in the bathroom door and the door that leads into the bedroom, which appeared to have hair attached to the damage in the door. The bed comforter was also missing, and a dark red stain was on the bed sheet, according to the arrest affidavit. Officers did not find Madeline inside the apartment. Chacon was interviewed again on May 12th at about 5:45 p.m. and told officers he forgot to mention the first time that he met with a cousin for drinks on May 10th and picked him up in his truck from the same apartment Madeline lived in. He dropped him back at his apartment and texted him around 11:06 p.m. to let him know he got to his house, according to the affidavit. Chacon stated he was the only one who drove his pickup during the month of May. Security camera footage from May 10th showed Chacon's pickup near an oil company near Madeline's apartment complex. The footage timestamp was from 1:59 a.m., according to the affidavit. Detectives obtained a search warrant for Chacon's cell phone records on May 13th from AT&T. According to the arrest affidavit, a Flock camera showed the license plate of Chacon's pickup in the area of South County Road 1160 at 3:22 a.m. Evidence gathered from traffic and business cameras and cell phone data showed Chacon's whereabouts were tracked between 12:26 a.m. and 3:37 a.m. On May 18th, Chacon was interviewed by detectives and was told they had found lies in his timeline, to which Chacon said, "Okay." Chacon asked if he could leave the interview and ended the interview, according to the arrest affidavit. A polygraph was attempted during this interview, but Chacon declined. On May 20th, detectives obtained cell phone records from AT&T. MPD sent the records to the Texas Rangers, who helped map out the geolocation records for the dates May 10th to May 12th. The geolocation showed an approximate 1 mile area around East County Road 190 and South County Road 1138 in Midland County. MPD and Texas Rangers conducted a search of the area and found human remains. Detectives found jewelry Madeline was known to wear on the remains, according to the affidavit. An autopsy will be performed in Dallas County. Chacon was charged with murder and is being held in Midland County Jail on a $3 million bond. This article is entitled Centennial Library Branch to Host Interactive STEM Exhibit by Ben Schaffer. Midland County Public Libraries will open a traveling exhibit titled Some Assembly Required on May 30th at the Centennial Branch, according to Midland County. The exhibit showcases interactive STEM concepts for visitors aged 2 to 10. The 1,200-square-foot display is designed to cultivate social, emotional, and academic skills, Midland County's press release states. Visitors can engage in fun and challenging activities that help foster the development of key social, emotional skills. There will be interactive stations throughout the exhibit that introduce STEM concepts and encourage children to tinker, invent, and solve problems. The exhibit invites children and their families to construct a bridge, form a band, plant a community garden, and participate in other experiences that feature storytelling, coding and logic, construction activities, mechanical concepts, music, visual communication, design, agricultural sustainability, and diversity. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Chevron CEO Open to More Deals After $6.3 Billion PDC Tie-Up by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. Chevron Corporation Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth says he's open to more deals after agreeing to buy PDC Energy Inc. for $6.3 billion. But will stay disciplined on price. Oil and gas producers are flush with cash after raking in record profits over the past year, leaving the U.S. energy patch ripe for a takeover boom. Companies are looking to bulk up and consolidate, acquiring rivals to secure drilling sites for the future. The PDC tie-up doesn't preclude our ability to do further transactions, Wirth said in a phone interview. But we don't have gaps to fill. We're always looking, but we'll stay very disciplined as we have been on a number of transactions, as we have done over recent years. Though a small deal by Chevron standards, the price is less than the company's first quarter cash flow from operations, PDC fits neatly into Wirth's plan to grow in areas that fit with its existing assets, rather than take on large transformative acquisitions. Chevron was widely praised for buying Noble Energy Inc. for $5 billion in a similar bolt-on deal in 2020, but has come under scrutiny recently for its lack of growth relative to ExxonMobil Corporation. Chevron will pay $72 a share for PDC as it seeks to expand in Colorado's DJ Basin, a roughly 14% premium on a 10-day average based on May 19th closing prices, according to a statement Monday. Separately, ExxonMobil Corporation agreed to sell assets in the Williston Basin to Chord Energy for $375 million amid what's expected to be a busy year of mergers and acquisitions in U.S. shale. We expect more deals such as this going forwards, said Biraj Borkataria, an analyst at RBC Capital Markets, who wrote in a note referring to Chevron's PDC acquisition. The deal will double Chevron's drilling portfolio in the DJ Basin to more than 600,000 acres, and nearly triple production in the area to 400,000 barrels a day. The PDC will move the DJ Basin, quote, into the top handful of assets that we have worldwide, Wirth said. PDC also has assets next to Chevron's huge position in the Permian Basin of West Texas and New Mexico, but they are small and not material to production, he said. Chevron plans to increase its capital spending by $1 billion per year after realizing about $400 million in cost savings once the transaction closes by the end of the year, pending regulatory and PDC shareholder approval. Its new global spending range will be $14 to $16 billion a year through 2027. We have strong equity as a currency, we have a strong balance sheet, and this is an accretive transaction that supports that, Wirth said. PDC climbed as much as 9.2% in New York, while Chevron fell 1.1%. PDC shareholders will receive 0.4638 shares of Chevron for each PDC share. The total enterprise value of the deal, including debt, is $7.6 billion. Chevron said it expects the tie-up to add about $1 billion in annual free cash flow at $70 per barrel Brent oil and Henry Hub natural gas at $3.50 per 1,000 cubic feet. Morgan Stanley and Evercore advised Chevron, while J.P. Morgan advised PDC. This article is entitled, Council to Vote a $995,000 Deal for New Athletic Center, by Stuart Doreen. A $995,000 agreement between the Midland Development Corporation and Busch Tennis Center for the building of an indoor athletic center will come before the Midland City Council on Tuesday. On May 1st, the Midland Development Corporation approved a promotional agreement with the Busch Tennis Center to help with the construction of the ACE Athletic Center in Northwest Midland. The center will include indoor basketball courts, an indoor turf field, and a high-performance training facility. The MDC's disbursement of funds is contingent upon the Busch Tennis Center securing $11.2 million in total commitments from all public and private sources by December 31, 2024, a city document states. The agreement also states that if the Busch Tennis Center fails to complete the project by December 31, 2025, the center shall repay the funds to the MDC upon receiving written demand from the MDC. With the building of the ACE Athletic Center and the indoor athletic center planned for the Scarborough Sports Complex, Midland will have basketball and volleyball courts available for Midlanders to use and for sports tourism possibilities. Note, the Midland City Council will meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday inside the Council Chamber at City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. This article is entitled, County Leaders Approve Horseshoe Director Description, by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court approved a final job description for the Director of Horseshoe Complex. The creation of the county position, which will be a county employee, comes after Midland County Judge Terry Johnson, Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez, and Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson voted to terminate the county's contract with Horseshoe Hospitality Services, who was previously under contract with the county to manage the facility. Robert Segura, Human Resources Director for Midland County, laid out the kind of professional the county should look for. Segura said they're looking for someone with experience as a director or manager of a similar facility as the Horseshoe, someone who can work in an irregular schedule and oversee planning for events and personnel. According to the summary on the job description, the position includes operating and maintaining the Horseshoe complex. Either personally or through staff, the responsibility to market, budget, collect revenue, hire staff, supervise staff, to provide public and employee security and safety, to construct and oversee lease agreements, to recommend and implement policy, to note mechanical/custodial needs, to note event and patron needs, and find solutions to those needs, the job description said. Essential duties and responsibilities of the position include manages budget and responsible for all staff for Horseshoe for both revenues and expenses, deals with purchase requests, collects revenue, heavy cash handling, negotiates fees and uses with tenants, and through the budget, markets, promotes, and advertises facilities. Acts as the key facility operational liaison for clients, assisting them with planning and organizing events. Oversees all guest-related services, operations, and staff, including crowd management. Coordinates service needs with food and beverage contractor and other vendors. Assists in preparation of facility budget and estimated revenues. Oversees the participation of related departments, such as operations, police, and traffic, for facility activities. Prepares cost estimates. Assists the Midland County auditors with obtaining invoices during events, and monitors final billing. The job description stated the pay range for the position is between $96,000 and $203,000. This article is entitled Deal to Widen State Highway 158 in Front of City Leaders by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will have the opportunity to vote on an agreement between the Midland Development Corporation and Kimley Horn and Associates related to the widening and improving of State Highway 158 from Wadley Avenue to Sinclair Avenue and from Wadley Avenue to Briarwood Avenue. The agreement is in the amount of $1.443 million, and the term of the agreement is from May 23, 2023 to September 30, 2024. The Midland Development Corporation approved the agreement on May 1st. The Midland City Council will meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday inside Council Chamber at City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Other items on the council agenda include the awarding of a contract for the Main Street Utility Bond Project, a road bond project. The contract is with Tex Excavation Inc. of Midland at a total cost of $3,959,444. The project will impact Main Street between Wadley Avenue and downtown. The awarding of a contract for State Highway 191 Wastewater Main Extension. The contract is with Edgardo Madrid and Associates for a total cost of $3.58 million. The project will help the Midland Development Corporation with land in need of development along State Highway 191. This is the Dear Abby column. Fiancé's kisses make woman physically ill. Dear Abby, I struggled for years with vomiting and nausea, as well as other digestive issues I dismissed as having a sensitive stomach. When my fiancé Mark and I started dating, he urged me to find out the cause of my issues. 6 months ago, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, an autoimmune disorder that is managed through a gluten-free diet. Mark has been incredibly supportive, and our kitchen is mostly gluten-free. I can get fairly sick, so we are pretty careful. There's just one issue. I can get cross-contaminated if he kisses me after eating gluten, and he does eat gluten quite often. It can be resolved if he brushes his teeth thoroughly, but he brushes his teeth only every 2 or 3 days. Mark is a grown man, and while we've discussed it briefly from a health standpoint, I don't want to be responsible for managing his oral hygiene. That needs to be his responsibility. I don't know where to draw the line, though, without being controlling. Is it reasonable to expect my fiancé to brush his teeth after eating gluten, or every morning and evening? Or must I just accept that I won't be able to kiss him except on rare occasions? Signed, Bad Kiss in Kansas. Dear Bad Kiss, If kissing your fiancé causes you to have episodes of nausea and vomiting, as well as other digestive issues, out of respect for your welfare, your fiancé should be willing, if not eager, to modify his snacking habits. Insisting that he do what dental health professionals have urged as far back as I can remember is not controlling. It is protecting your health and his. Speak up. Dear Abby, my cousin is refusing to allow me to see my Aunt Betty. After a horrible 2020, during which my cousin lost her husband to cancer, and the lockdown occurred that kept most people isolated, my cousin still guards her mom beyond reason. I have asked repeatedly if we could meet in person at an outside location and offered to wear a mask, but she refuses. My cousin said in a text that she's in charge of her mom's schedule. Her reasons when we speak are the loss of her husband, grief, and fear. My aunt is visited often by her grandkids, who live regular lives, exposed to the many elements out there, and my cousin works in an industry where she's exposed to many people. My aunt is in her late 80s, and I'm afraid the next time I see her will be in a casket. After losing several people close to me these past few years, it is obvious to me that life is short, and we have no idea when our time will end. When my father died, Aunt Betty and her husband were very kind to me. I have always adored her. It makes me sad, and sometimes angry, that my cousin is doing this. I think she's being selfish. Should I say anything to her, or just let it be? Signed, Missing My Aunt Out West. Dear Missing, by all means, have that conversation with your cousin. Because she has a career that exposes her to strangers who could transmit a contagious disease, and she allows the grandkids to visit, her reasons for not allowing you to see your aunt make no sense. What does make sense is that she may have other reasons for preventing you from being involved with her mother. What they may be, only she can answer. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate. This article is entitled, Father-Son Team Behind Stronghold, Launch Garrison Energy, by Mella McEwen. Oil and gas operators selling a successful company don't always take the money and run. Instead, they start again in search of new opportunities. That's the case with the Wetherills, a father and son team who built Stronghold Energy II and sold its assets to Ring Energy in August 2022. They've just launched Garrison Energy Holdings alongside the management team that built up Stronghold. Armed with a $500 million line of equity financing from an institutional investor and Garrison's management team and employees, they are on the hunt for opportunities. We're looking all over the Permian Basin, the Delaware Basin, Central Basin Platform, Northwest Shelf, Midland Basin, all across the Permian Basin, for assets with upside to develop. Horizontal, vertical, recompletion, Caleb Wetherill told the reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. He will serve as chief executive officer, while his father Steve will serve as executive chairman. We're looking for, really, assets with upside that we can expeditiously develop, apply our technical expertise to develop, he said. And with $500 million in its treasury, Garrison can look at deals as large as $1 billion or even larger. Garrison's investors have the ability to add more equity and as small as one or two sections that have large upside potential. It can be an outright sale or a farm-out structure, he added. We feel fortunate to have a big checkbook behind us, Caleb said. Capital is not a challenge for us. It presents opportunities for us, and we can quickly evaluate and make deals. We have the opportunity to deploy a rig quickly. The number one goal, he said, is to generate value for the investors and to do so by building a scaled company. Caleb said the management team is looking to swiftly put its capital to work and grow quickly. He said the company is already off to a quick start, currently looking at several deals. We're committed, when someone brings us a deal, to do technical evaluations and due diligence and give a quick answer, he said. The Wetherills plan to start up a new oil and gas company and the $500 million equity backing it are a sign of confidence in the industry. We believe the world will need oil and gas long term, said Caleb. The U.S. onshore and the Permian Basin specifically will be a critical part of the story. We look to provide safe, reliable energy for the rest of the world so people can flourish. It's so important to have affordable, abundant, reliable energy. This has really come into focus in the last year. We're excited to do our part in the Permian Basin. The Wetherills are joined by a senior team with significant experience and expertise, said Caleb. They are Executive Vice President of Reservoir Engineering and Corporate Development, Matt Holland, Senior Vice President of Land, Drew Hendricks, Senior Vice President of Exploration, Josh Russo, Senior Vice President of Completions, Lee Martin, Senior Vice President of Accounting and Administration, Misty Andrews, Vice President of Drilling, Rafael Madrid, and Vice President of Finance, Will Regan. Caleb said the plan is also to continue following regulations, be prudent operators, good stewards of its acreage, and invest back into the community. Midland is our home, he said. We're operating in our own backyard. This article is entitled Serve Midland Tourney Benefits MISD Education by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Serve Midland hosted its third annual charity tennis tournament on April 20th to 21st and presented the Midland ISD Education Foundation board members with a $100,000 check toward their organization. The final number post-event totaled $115,000. The MISD Education Foundation helps guide funding that contributes to enrichment and innovative instruction through the district leaving its mark on all students through a variety of initiatives. The Serve Midland Charity Tennis Tournament organized more than 252 players who participated through Thursday and Friday in both the men's and women's division. Tournaments were hosted at Midland Country Club and the Racquet Club of Midland.
Hi, this is Mackie, and I'll be reading from the Odessa American for May 22, 2023. MMH Achieves Pathway to Excellence Designation by Odessa American. Midland Memorial Hospital joins a premier group of organizations that have received Pathway to Excellence designation from the American Nurses Credentialing Center, a Monday press release details. The Pathway designation is a global credential that highlights MMH's commitment to creating a healthy work environment where nurses feel empowered and valued. Midland Memorial Hospital's nurses are an integral part of the healthcare team, with a voice in policy and practice. Pathway nurses are engaged, resulting in higher job satisfaction, reduced turnover, improved safety, and better patient outcomes. As a Pathway organization, MMH leads the effort to enhance quality of care, patient and nursing safety, and the future of healthcare delivery. The continued dedication to maintain a high-level work environment partnered with quality patient outcomes is proven through this designation and the history of achieving it for 12 years in a row, said Dr. Kit Bredemus, Chief Nursing Officer, Vice President of Nursing, in the release. Pathway to Excellence is one more way we are leading healthcare for Greater Midland. For more information on the Pathway to Excellence Recognition Program, visit ANCC's website at nursingworld.org/pathway. Fawcett Eager to Hear Schlemire Report Recommendations by Odessa American. The results of a long-anticipated Schlemire Airport study will be presented during Tuesday's Ector County Commissioners Court meeting. Last year, the Texas Department of Transportation hired Kaufman Associates to look into possible ways to economically develop the area around the airport safely. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett is eager to learn what they discovered and what they'll recommend. They looked at land use inside the county's property, possible extensions of the runway protection zones, and what type of an investment would be needed for different classes of airplanes. It's kind of laying out everything we need to know, so basic just nuts and bolts of what this facility is and then what it could be with some suggestions, Fawcett said. Anything built out there has to be for airport purposes, Fawcett said. I'm in favor of exploring what all options are out there. It's a great asset. It's our similar thinking with the Coliseum. We're probably going to be looking in the future at hiring a company to see what all we can do to make the best use of that land and see where we're going further with that particular asset, Fawcett said. This is a part of that theme of let's identify what these assets are and what they could possibly be. If it makes good economic sense and good land use sense and the citizens like what they pose out before us, then yeah, we'll take action and move in that direction. The judge said he hopes nearby residents will attend the commissioner's 10 a.m. court meeting or one of Kaufman Associates' two other presentations, which are scheduled for 2 to 4 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. in the commissioner's courtroom. I think it'll be good to dispel the rumors. A lot of it has all been about expanding the runways for larger jets, but this study will show that there's not really a whole lot of opportunity for that, Fawcett said. By seeing it mapped out and having it explained, I think it will answer a lot of the public's questions. I do anticipate that there will be folks who will be happy with what they're hearing, and it should be very digestible for them to understand. The county also wants to hear suggestions, Fawcett said. In other matters, Fawcett said the commissioners will hear from CGI Digital, a company that would create a series of videos for the county's website at no cost. We'd get to show off the different aspects of Ector County, Fawcett said. The videos could serve as a recruitment tool for economic development purposes. But it could also educate local residents about art projects, downtown development plans, and health care and education in Ector County. It could really just showcase our whole community. To attract young folks' workforce, we need a lot of workforce. I think this will help to bring a good light on our great county. A company called Zen City will also educate the commissioners about its services. Fawcett said Zen City software would track online conversations to know what local residents are talking about and then inform commissioners about those things so the county can best address them on social media and the county's website. We think it's valid with the upcoming discussions about the courthouse and the library and some of the other developments in our community, Fawcett said. It would also be helpful when it comes to road construction projects because it would allow the county to tell residents what roads to avoid during various projects, including I-20 and West 42nd Street, he said. It's perhaps a tool in the toolbox should we choose, Fawcett said. Finalists announced for this year's Odessa's Got Talent by Odessa American. The finalists for this year's Odessa Got Talent have been announced. The live competition will be held at 7:30 p.m. June 17th at the Ector Theater. The contestants will be competing for $9,000 worth of prizes, including the coveted People's Choice Award, which is awarded to the contestant with the most votes on www.odessasgottalent.com. The event is a fundraiser for the Permian Basin Mission Center, which provides emergency food, help with rent and utilities, and clothing to community members in crisis. This year's finalists in the youth category are Isaac Gonzalez, Suit and Tie, Allie B., Austin Contreras, Mason Simmons, and Ballet Folklorica Yolia. The contestants in the adult category are Ariana Franco, Landry Wells, Chet Johnson, Emily Bell, Kayla Dos Santos, The Texicans Band, Faith Burnaby, Kai and Dad Duo, Ashley Jenkins, and Never Too Young. For more information about Odessa's Got Talent and for tickets, go to https://odessasgottalent.com/. Flock Camera Helps Police Nab Alleged Car Thief by Odessa American. With the help of a Flock camera, police arrested an Odessa man on stolen vehicle and drug charges Saturday night. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a camera spotted a Toyota Tundra that had been reported stolen from a Denver City man near East 42nd Street and Tanglewood Lane shortly before 9:30 p.m. Saturday. OPD and University of Texas Permian Basin officers tried to pull the driver over, but he didn't stop until he got to Sam's Club on North John Ben Shepherd Parkway, and when he did stop, he fled on foot, the report stated. When the officers caught up with him, they escorted him to the ground and took him into custody. According to the police report, the officers found roughly 40 fentanyl-laced pills scattered around the driver's seat and methamphetamine in sunglasses case. The M30 pills appeared to have been altered and concealed in an attempt to dispose of the drugs, the report stated. Jesus Tito Hernandez, 42, was arrested on suspicion of evading arrest with a vehicle, unauthorized use of a vehicle, tampering with physical evidence, evading arrest, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of meth. The most serious charge is a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Hernandez, a former Hobbs, New Mexico resident, remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on surety bonds totaling $52,000 and a warrant out of Lee County, New Mexico. Latin Queens and Comedy Kings. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788, Midland, has scheduled the Latin Queens and Comedy Kings comedy show June the 2nd. The doors open at 7 p.m. and the event starts at 8 p.m. Tickets start at $40. Odessa Man Facing Burglary Assault Charges by Odessa American. An Odessa man was arrested early Monday morning after his former girlfriend told police he forced his way into her apartment and chased the man he found inside around with a knife. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call from the 1200 block of Harless Avenue around 1:30 a.m. Monday. The caller told a dispatcher Pedro Miguel Granados Juvier, 33, was chasing a 34-year-old man with a knife. When officers arrived, they found the alleged victim extremely upset and hiding, the report stated. He told the officers Javier chased him with a knife and threatened to kill him. Javier's former girlfriend told officers she opened the front door of her apartment to let the 34-year-old man out, and Javier was waiting outside, the report stated. The 46-year-old said Javier forced his way inside, grabbed a knife from her kitchen, and chased the other man outside. Huvier was found nearby and arrested on suspicion of burglary of a habitation, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Huvier remained in the Ector County Jail Monday afternoon. No bond had been set. OH teacher recognized by Odessa American. Odessa High School leaders on Monday surprised Jose Flores with the news he has been selected as the I Teach Texas Secondary Teacher of the Year. Flores is the head gymnastics coach at OHS and just completed his first year in ECISD. He was selected from approximately 1,800 nominees. This honor includes a cash award from I Teach Texas. I Teach Texas is an online alternative certification program for teachers, a news release said. OHS Top 2 Aiming High by Ruth Campbell. Having known Odessa High School valedictorian Anastasio David Pondo since first grade, salutatorian Gabriel Haley seemed resigned that his friend was going to be the top student. They will walk the stage along with their fellow seniors at 8:30 p.m. Friday, May 26th at Ratliff Stadium. In first grade, Haley said he and Pondo were in a chess tournament together. Pondo came in first, so that was a harbinger of things to come. Pondo is going to Texas Tech University to major in microbiology and go into the medical field. He plans to go into dermatology. Haley is going to Yale University. He will be in the general humanities area. His main focus is going to be literary analysis. Haley said he's not the type to pay too much attention to rankings. But I remember at the beginning of junior year, I heard the IB seniors talking about logging into Naviance and finding their rank. I looked at it and I wasn't too far off. I was like, I can do this. So I started grinding. You might not have known, but I thought it was tacitly implied that David was number one throughout junior and senior year, Haley said. Pondo said he didn't want to check too much because he didn't want to be bombarded with questions. He was focused on school. Pondo said his parents wanted him to do his best, but they weren't going to be angry if he wasn't at the top. I don't know if either one of us was necessarily playing the GPA game. I know we're both very internally competitive. When we tried to get high enough to where we didn't see anyone else on our level, that's where we met each other again, Haley said. Pondo and his brother Alex is at Tech studying to become an ophthalmologist. I'm glad to go there. It will facilitate my next step in life, Pondo said. Parks are focus of City Council agenda by Kim Smith. Odessa's parks appear several times on this week's City Council agenda. During the council's 3 p.m. Tuesday work session, members will discuss improvements at Woodson, Sherwood, and Slater Parks. According to materials provided to City Council members, several light poles at the Woodson Park Aquatic Center have been blown over by high winds. The city asked 6 vendors to bid on a project to upgrade the light pole design and install new poles, and one, Hawkins Construction, was the only one to reply. Its bid is just under $152,000. The Parks and Recreation Department is also expected to ask the council to consider putting down TIF turf grass at Sherwood and Slater Parks. If the council approves of the $157,000 project, areas of the parks will be closed 6 to 8 weeks. Mayor Javier Joven is also scheduled to discuss the possibility of banning kids from parks during school hours unless they are there with a parent or legal guardian. During the council's regular meeting at 6 p.m., the council will discuss amending YMCA's swimming program contract to include security at Floyd Gwynn, Sherwood Park, Woodson Park, and the Jurassic Sprayground. The total cost would be $34,000, and the YMCA is asking the city to pay for 40% or $20,400. On July 29, 2022, OPD announced three kids took shelter inside the pool area of Sherwood Park around 4:15 p.m. after someone took three shots at them on the outside of the pool's east fence line and fled. Two 16-year-olds were later arrested in connection with the incident. The council will also hear from Craig Stoker, last year's Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone chairman. A TIRZ is a special zone created by city councils to attract new investment in an area, and the taxes raised are used to finance public improvements in that area. Jovan and city council member Mark Mata have expressed their disappointment in TIRZ and Stoker in recent weeks. During the council's May 9th meeting, council members Steve Thompson and Gilbert Vasquez voted to ratify the TIRZ board's recommendation that Stoker be renamed chairman, but Mata wanted to know what the board has accomplished, noting it hasn't been consistently meeting. As a result of his question, Stoker's appointment was voted down 5-2, and Stoker will give an update on TIRZ Tuesday night. During the same meeting, Jovan also brought up TIRZ during a discussion that ultimately led to KDC Associates' contract with the city being terminated. KDC was hired to design a downtown entertainment district using an updated downtown master plan to springboard from. The mayor has repeatedly said he was opposed to the $85,000 updated master plan, which was unveiled last year, and he was opposed to paying KDC $640,000 to redesign the entertainment district. We did it reluctantly because the TIRZ was adamant they wanted to get the new master plan done. They needed to do it. We didn't want to do it for the reason is that we knew what we were going to get. We're going to get a regurgitated, updated, watered-down feasibility study that was going to do nothing, Jovan said during the May 9th meeting. In other matters, the city is expected to discuss recycling again. During its May 9th meeting, the council passed resolutions to reject a contract to haul recyclables and another contract for BRI Incorporated to provide recycling services. Council members discussed the fact there is no longer a market for such materials and it's not cost effective. Police. Intoxicated driver found with fentanyl-laced pills by Odessa American. An Odessa man who was allegedly driving while intoxicated Friday night is facing drug charges, too, after police said they found fentanyl-laced pills in his vehicle. According to an Odessa Police Department report, an officer pulled Aaron Lee Taran, 19, over in the 3700 block of Andrews Highway after observing him weaving in and out of his lane, driving below the speed limit and almost causing an accident around 11:15 p.m. Friday. Taran had slurred speech, appeared to be drowsy, and performed poorly on field sobriety tests, the report stated. After Taran was placed under arrest, officers taking inventory of his Chrysler 300C found 9 fentanyl-laced oxycodone pills and 2 folded-up $1 bills with drug residue inside them, according to the report. After giving a blood sample at Medical Center Hospital, Taran was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison, DWI, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Taran was released Saturday after posting surety bonds totaling $25,500. Serve Midland hosts third annual charity tennis tournament benefiting MISD by Odessa American. Midland Serve Midland is dedicated to uplifting and empowering individuals and supporting the community in Midland. Their goal is to come together, have fun, and raise money to support various organizations and causes through the shared experience of tennis. This style of fundraising is unique in that the beneficiary changes each year, allowing them to serve various organizations in Midland. This year was no different. On Thursday and Friday, April 20th and 21st, Serve Midland hosted its third annual charity tennis tournament and presented the Midland ISD Education Foundation Board members with a $100,000 check towards their organization. Final number post-event totaled $115,000. The MISD Education Foundation helps guide funding that contributes to enrichment and innovative instruction throughout the district, leaving its mark on all students through a variety of initiatives. The Serve Charity Tennis Tournament organized over 252 players who participated through Thursday and Friday in both the men and women's division. Tournaments were hosted at Midland Country Club and the Racquet Club of Midland. Friday's event began at 5:30 p.m. and featured an exhibition match between professional tennis players Brett Jolson, Kays Van Toff, Alex Kuznetsov, and Robbie Ginepri. The match was followed by a party on the patio on the greens of the Racquet Club, where all attendees were encouraged to wear country club whites. Party included dinner, dancing, and a raffle with music provided by Rob Baird and DJ Brian. Presenting sponsor was Diamondback Energy. To see a full list of sponsors, visit servemidland.com. Women's Self-Defense Class by Odessa American. The Latina Entrepreneur Academy in the Permian Basin has scheduled a women's self-defense class led by Becca Haberman from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. June 1st at Curves in Odessa, 1541 JBS Parkway. A special guest appearance will include Dr. Detrick L. Gorman, America's relaxation doctor. The event is free and open to the public.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.